Are there common themes surrounding student empowerment in music education? Therese has been analyzing past episodes of the podcast to figure out what people are really saying. Keep listening to find out what she learned and what this can mean for music educators.
Welcome to Pass the Baton, Empowering Students in Music Education. Here, we amplify the voices of music teachers around the world who are passing the baton and creating environments where the music students are empowered. Together, we can help students transform from passive consumers to vibrant creatives.
Welcome back to the Pass the Baton podcast. I'm Catherine Finch.
And I'm Teresa Hoover. We're so glad that you're here today. Before we get into today's interview, we want to remind you, you can find the show notes underneath the episode in YouTube or in the podcast player linked below the video, all of that good stuff. So make sure you check that out for any important links and just information.
Yeah. And if you like today's interview, which I know you will, please consider showing some Pass the Baton love and hit subscribe or follow, leave a review. All those things help the podcast.
Mm-hmm. And in addition, we do have a Buy Me a Coffee site. If you haven't checked that out yet, for less than the cost of a cup of coffee, you can send some additional support that really just helps with hosting fees and other expenses and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, today is exciting because we get to just talk together because I'm going to interview you, Teresa.
Yay!
And all the things that you've been up to since you've been studying hard. So I know I always get, you know, I sometimes get to hear a little bit about what's going on with you when we talk day to day, but I really wanted to spend some time sitting down and talking to you about a research project that you're working on and all the exciting things that you're getting from that.
Yeah. So just to give even a tiny bit more background, if anybody's maybe listening for the first time. So I'm currently working on a PhD in music learning and teaching at Arizona State University. Yep. With a PhD comes research, right? That's just one of those things that we get to do. And, you know, the culminating project is obviously a large research project, the dissertation. But along the way, I get to do smaller little research projects. And that's what I've been working on right now. And the reason that Catherine and I want to talk about this today is because this research project had to do with the Pass the Baton podcast. So basically, what I wanted to do was, you know, we have all of these interviews. What are we up to? This is maybe 59, Catherine. We've talked to all these incredible people, but I wanted to see if I could just distill it down and figure out, like, really, what was everyone talking about? Obviously, they're talking about, you know, student empowerment and they're talking about music education, but, like, was there any, like, real commonalities between the different interviews? So I wanted to just kind of do an analysis to figure out, you know, what was there. So basically to do the project, I kind of narrowed it down because 59 is a lot of interviews. So I decided to just look at people who were focusing on secondary music education during our second season, which was last school year. So what's that, 2022-2023, that school year. So it came down to 11 interviews, which was, you know, 13 different people. And I went through, got a transcript of all the interviews. So I ran it through a transcription program, you know, me in technology, ran it through the transcription program and then just went through and listened and read every single one really, really carefully and just pulled out, like, anything that they talked about that seemed like it was related to student ownership, student agency, empowerment, or any of those things. And I ended up, you know, trying to put things into little categories. So, you know, each interview probably had like 10 to 15 different categories of things the teachers talked about. And at the end of the day, there were probably like 75 different things among all 11 interviews, just looking at the different things that people talked about. And then from there, I had to just figure out, like, what did it all mean? And then try to condense all of those 75 themes into a smaller number. And I think I got down to like 25, and then to get those down into an even smaller number. And it was just, it was kind of crazy. So for those who are like researchy type people, it's qualitative research, right? Because we're talking about like people and things they said and stuff like that. And really looking, we can call it a phenomenology. I learned this later, just so you'll know. Phenomenology, because we're looking for like the essence of what everyone was talking about. Mm-hmm. And also, if you're interested in knowing, which I'm sure you're not, I did get informed consent to make sure that it was ethical. Because when we did these interviews, like, we never told people that I was going to be researching what they said,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So I did get consent from everybody whose interview I used just to make sure that they were okay with it and you know, were into the yeah. idea, which they were. So good. Does that kind of explain the process?
Yeah, I guess... was there like, I guess just not being in a program like that. So I know you're going to talk about your findings, but like, mm-hmm. then when, is there a product that comes out of it or like, what do you, not a research paper necessarily, right?
Okay. Or- so the original goal, or I should say not the original, the first goal was actually to present this, at the SMTE conference, which is the Symposium on Music Teacher Education. So the first goal was to be able to, you know, come up with some findings, be able to say like, look what my research produced, and then to be able to present that as a poster at this symposium, which I was able to do. That was back in October in Salt Lake City. So now I'm kind of on phase okay. two, where I'm just, you know, tightening up the analysis and trying to write this up into an actual article that could maybe be published someday somewhere. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So nice. it's a lot. And like, this is not just me. Well, it's a lot of me sitting in my house, just analyzing and writing, but you know, also meeting with my advisor weekly to kind of talk through things. And then also meeting with Catherine to be like, I'm finding these things. What yeah. do you think? Right. Because you were there, you were part of these interviews too.
Yeah.
So it was neat to be able to like have those conversations and say like, okay, so I'm sure. I'm thinking this. Does this make sense to you as somebody who's been part of this? And yeah. So again, yeah. It's I'm learning more and more that like as lonely as research can sometimes feel, it's not, because you need those other people to like talk you through things and in some cases talk you off of an edge. Like the day, remember Catherine, the day that I was like, we used the wrong word. And there was a moment that like, is empowerment what we really meant? But
yeah,
it is. We're fine. We don't need to change everything.
Yeah. And it took me about 3 or 4 explanations of it to be like, oh, that's what she means. Because it just, I don't know, you know, I'm not thinking about it all the time. And it just took me a while to wrap my mind around what you were trying to tell me, which yeah. perfectly makes perfect sense now. But
and
yeah,
I guess remind me to come back to that point after we talk about the findings and I'll explain like why I was so panicked about choosing
yeah,
the word.
Yeah, for sure.
So, okay. So you want to know like what I found?
Yes, the findings, okay. Please.
The findings. All right. So after like taking all of those different things that all of those different people talked about, it really came down to there were 2 main things that people talked about. They talked about what they wanted for their students and they talked about what they did to get it. Okay. So what they wanted for their students, they wanted them to be independent musicians and independent learners. And they achieved that by really focusing on the individual student needs and then focusing on the environment of the classroom. And when you say it that way, it's kind of like, well, no kidding. Doesn't it almost sound a little basic?
Yeah.
but it was really kind of yeah. to get to that point and to think of like, oh, okay, so this is what they were getting at. So sorry, I'm looking, I'm gonna read to you some of the different things. So when they were talking about like independent musicians, they wanted students to be lifelong musicians. They wanted the music making to extend outside of the classroom. They wanted the students to be able to compose. They wanted them to be able to practice their instrument or voice independently. They wanted them to make musical decisions on their own, to think creatively. And there are a lot of people talked about like the other 80%, right? The students who aren't involved in secondary ensembles and how we could help them kind of establish and grow their own musicianship. Mm-hmm. People also wanted their students to be independent learners, right? So going beyond just the music making and talking mm-hmm. about like different life skills that they wanted their students to have, to be okay with making mistakes and like understanding that failure is just a part of what we do. It's part of the process. They wanted students thinking critically and like having that inquiry kind of mindset. And I don't know, like, does that all resonate with you?
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. And I mean, I think, I know this wasn't your research, but if we had looked at some of the more elementary or just outside of season two, mm-hmm. that those sound like themes in other episodes for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think I have a feeling I could go back to all 59 and we would see very similar because it
right,
does.
But that would have been
so much sense.
Yeah. But that would have been a lot of transcripts and all the things.
Yeah. We're not,
which I'm so there. Glad you have tech that can,
oh my goodness,
make that so much faster.
Yes. Thank goodness for technology. Descript. That's a wonderful, that's the program I use. So, okay. So that's what they wanted, right? They wanted them to be independent musicians, independent learners. Mm-hmm. And the way that they, music teachers, were achieving it was they were focusing on individual student needs. And what I kind of thought was so fascinating about that was even people who were ensemble directors, I felt like they rarely talked about the ensemble as a whole. They really mm-hmm. talked about the individual students. And they talked about making sure that the focus was on individual students, hearing from every student, like seeing every student in the room. The idea of like student voice, giving the students choices, asking them for feedback. That was a really common thing too. A number of people who would ask the students what they thought and like actually cared about what the students said. So that was really neat. And then a lot of everybody in some way or another was focusing on the environment, the classroom environment. The term safe space came up so many times. Mm-hmm. Teachers were really aware of making sure that the space that they had created in the classroom was welcoming to students, that students felt like they belonged. They focused on building relationships and building that sense of community within the classroom. Making sure that there was joy and just fun in what they did and what the students were doing. Thinking about themselves as a teacher, as someone who was a facilitator and not necessarily just the director or the, you know, the person who was constantly saying what to do. And even just the language that the teachers used, being really aware of making sure it was student-centered and student-focused language. So mm-hmm. I don't know. It was fascinating to think about those four different things.
Teresa, can you, when you said,
go ahead.
When you said the student-centered language, do you mean it was just more like always talking about the students, or you mean like they talked about a collective we, or what do you mean?
Collective we, and just not as much like, I want you to do this. It was more, okay, students, you're going to do this, or mm-hmm. students, you should think this, or isn't a good example because it's still kind of teacher focused. But just getting rid of that, like that I,
yeah,
I'm not saying I, but it's no, this is about you. This is about the students. This is about the other people in the classroom. It's not because I want you to do something. Mm-hmm.
Okay. No, that makes sense.
Yeah. It's interesting. There were a handful of people who did speak to things like ownership and agency related, just kind of saying how they wanted the students to have ownership of the program, of their musicianship, of the classroom, things like that. And that they did feel it was important that the classroom was student-centered and not mm-hmm. teacher-focused. And I just think that's such a big deal because so often in secondary, I'm thinking secondary ensembles at the moment, it can get very teacher focused, right? Mm-hmm. The teacher stands on that podium and just even has that presence of everyone's eyes are there. So to hear somebody in a secondary ensemble say like, no, it's not about me, it's about the kids, is really, really pretty neat.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Especially because I feel like, and maybe this is not, but secondary kind of has so many, more performances, but just mm-hmm. it's performance based and it's, we got to get ready for this. We got to get ready for this. So mm-hmm. yeah, it's you really got to think through that. And we've heard so many people say like, of course there's times that like, when we get to a deadline, yeah, we're gonna just do what we need to do to get to the deadline. Right. But yeah, to hear people try to break from that form is mm-hmm. awesome.
Well, and to hear that they're doing it successfully, right? Their students are having good experiences.
Yes.
And the students are still, you know, being very musical, even though they've kind of broken from that paradigm of just, you know, perform, perform, perform. So it is really encouraging to hear that kind of stuff.
Well, and I also, again, I don't know if this came up, but I remember hearing a lot of people saying when we teach them how they can do it on their own, they become more efficient in every day. So you don't have the same problems. I mean, you have your problems and like the fingerings and the things like that, but they have different tools to fix those things. They have, and so, you know, you almost make them a little bit more efficient. You don't have to spend so much time on some of those things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. So I don't know. It's really neat. So part of the research process, I was going to come back to this, is you have to not only, you know, study the thing you're studying, but also like see what other smart people have said about it, right? It can't just happen in a vacuum. So part of it is going back and like seeing what other people have said about empowerment. And this is where my panic came from, Catherine, because, you know, a lot of people are writing about like student agency, student-centeredness, autonomy, what are some of the other terms, even like democratic education, like that stuff is all existing. And people are talking, writing about it. But what's interesting about the word empowerment, a lot of times that I'm finding that in music education research, they're actually using it in terms of social justice. Mm. And even like some almost, I don't want to say political, but like meaning like socio-political, like how students can be empowered to do good in the community, like as a whole, you know, or even like artistic citizenship. So when they're talking about empowerment, a lot of it right now goes way outside the music classroom and mm-hmm. looks at what students are doing in those kind of non-musical ways. That was where my panic came from. Like, oh my goodness, is empowerment not the right thing? If empowerment means to like be an activist, nobody's talking about activism on our podcast. So I was kind of worried. But I think what I ended up like coming to and telling myself, you know, the definition that I use for empowerment that kind of distilled what a lot of people said was just the belief that you can act effectively. And that doesn't mean it has to be act effectively in the broad scheme of the world. It just means that you can mm-hmm. act effectively as a musician, as a learner, as a member of an ensemble, as a member of a music community, or even beyond that, right? So maybe, you know, even though nobody on our podcast is talking about like the social justice realm of things, these dispositions that the students are gaining to be independent and to be proactive and to be all those things, could that then encourage them to be more active in their communities?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, I think there's a good chance like that we're helping students gain those skills and gain just even that mindset that like, hey, I can make a difference.
Yeah. The confidence, right? You know, mm-hmm. hey, I can be independent. I am a strong musician, leader. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I can do this without a teacher standing over me telling me how to do it.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think we did use the right word. I think we did, because right, we're helping these students be independent musicians, be independent citizens, and just, I think, be good humans.
Yeah. I feel like there was some other piece to it that I have to watch myself say, because it took me a couple of times for you to explain it. And then I think I understand it. Can you talk to us again? And you've said it on these podcasts before, but like the giving ownership and taking ownership, because I feel like that's one that I used to say all the time.
Yes.
And now I'm like, words matter, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, thanks for reminding me. We cannot give students ownership, right? I mean, and in some ways we can even say we can't empower students, because if mm-hmm. we give them ownership, we use that phrase, then what that means is that we can also take it away. So if it's something that we can give and take, then it's not really theirs, right? Mm-hmm. So I think we do have to be really careful with our language when we talk about it. I try to say and use the language of, you know, creating an environment where students feel empowered. We're creating, you know, creating conditions where students can be empowered. Because if I'm just, oh, well, I'm going to give them ownership. Well, no, all I've done is like, say, here, it's like I'm dangling the carrot, right? If you do this, you can have ownership. No, that's not how it works. It's got to be that we've created this environment. We've created these conditions where students feel that they are empowered. Mm-hmm. It's not that they've been given that. Does
Yeah,
that
no, that
kind of make sense?
it does. Yeah, for sure. I think it's just something that I fumble around because it makes a lot of sense. You know, creating that environment where they can step up, basically, right? They can take charge of their own learning or whatever. But and I said the word take.
But it's hard, but right?
Yeah.
You have to think
yeah.
about it differently.
But it is, yeah, it's something I've been thinking about, and I notice myself saying certain things. And I think we've talked to other guests and they're like, oh my gosh, I've never thought of it that way. So it's not like the languages that we use is so horrible out there or whatever, but it is interesting to really think through what you say.
Yeah. And how we use those words and do we say it in a way, in the way that we mean it? Right.
Yeah.
Because if we say, oh, I'm going to give them ownership in this task, then like in the back of your head, maybe you really are thinking, well, I'm giving this.
Right.
And how do I shift my mindset to think of a way that it's something that the students have.
Mm-hmm.
It's that's not reliant on me providing. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
yeah.
it's a lot to think about.
It is, but it's good stuff to think about.
Oh, it's awesome. Yeah, it's really, yeah. really cool.
So in this project, like, you know, you said hopefully maybe an article will come out, a published article of some kind. Is there like your goal in what you would want music educators to get out of this research, or is there a hope?
Yeah, I think for like a music educator perspective, like people who are, you know, in the classroom day to day doing the thing, it's that you can kind of think about those four things and consider what that looks like in your classroom and maybe even what it could look like, right? Thinking about in what opportunities do the students have to be independent musicians? How am I helping to cultivate those skills so they can become independent musicians and independent learners? And, you know, how am I thinking about the classroom environment in a way that is creating that space where students feel like they can be vulnerable and they can take a risk and, you know, that they can grow in that way? And then also, like, how am I thinking about the individual students? Right? Am I thinking about like, oh, here's what my ensemble needs? Or is it like, oh, here's what second alto needs? Or here's what, you know, this particular student and how we're going to make sure that each student has what they need to achieve that. So I think just kind of using those four things as a frame, like when you're thinking, okay, what am I doing? You know, and we've talked about a lot, like, you know, we have the different qualities of an empowered student. And I think that's all part of it too. But when you look at like that big picture, you know, the independence, I think is huge.
Yeah. 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 I wonder, cause you know, people always ask, how do I get started? And I wonder if it helps people to think, cause you know, there's so many places that you can start, but if you think maybe one of those, you know, and even pick one that's, you know, you kind of feel it as a strength of yours. Cause I mean, no one's perfect. So pick a strength and then dissect it. Right. And what else? Where are the room? Where's the wiggle room for other things? And I don't know. But yeah, I think that's just a different way to maybe help people also think about their classroom.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I do want to share one thing I did, and you're going to have to forgive me while I really quick share my sound. Sorry, I forgot to do this already.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Okay, hold on. So I do want to share one thing that I kind of created for this presentation I did back in October. And basically I put together some little sound clips from each of the different areas of the findings, right? Like a little sound clip of people talking about students being independent musicians and talking about them being independent learners and stuff like that. So I'd love to share one of them with you right now, just because I thought it was really neat to hear it come from the voice of those who said it. So this is people who were talking specifically about student empowerment, ownership, agency, and stuff like that.
Everything that we do and that we say is always couched in terms of ownership.
It's only built an enormous amount of ownership in our program. How do we encourage our students to take more ownership of their musicianship?
But they felt empowered, I think, by that, because they're like, I get to decide. learning from them at the same time as I'm asking them to learn from me, I think really helped kind of center that sense of agency all around.
But giving the students that feeling of ownership, stepping back and getting out of their way a little bit.
Where kids feel empowered to make that declaration and say, I understand what the composer is doing.
It's wonderful to be an interpreter as a conductor, but it's even better when we empower our students to be interpreters.
I always led as a learner-centered classroom and really shifted that like last 15 years of my life where I led by inquiry.
Empowering students to be exploring learning on their own and to be working with each other.
Music won't teach effective leadership skills if you don't give students the opportunity to be empowered and have a voice.
Yeah. That was really cool.
Yeah.
That was.
Could, as you were listening, could you like remember some of the different interviews?
I know. I was trying. What was that? Yeah. Some popped out more than others of, they're recognizing their voice, but yeah.
Yeah. It's neat to think about, you know, all of those different people talking about the same thing in different ways. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all talking about how the students really can have ownership in music through whether it's, you know, game-based structures or whether it's through student-led rehearsals or, you know, all of the different things that we kind of focused on last season. It's just neat to hear it all come down into one.
Yeah. And that's, I think it's, I love the podcast selfishly because it's so cool to hear how people found their own way into it, you know, or the different ways that they do it. Cause there isn't one way, right? Like there isn't do this and then you have it, like, no. Right. And, no. and it changes from year to year with your kids and post COVID and all the things. And that's I think the joy of teaching, and learning is, it's always a path that you have to, you know, navigate, but it's cool to see how other people think to do things.
Yeah. And something that you just said kind of reminded me as well, like nobody just came out of their college degree and was like, bam, here's how I'm doing it. And like right off the bat, everything that they did was completely student-centered and focused on it. For everybody we talked to, it's always been like a progression. Well, first I tried this and then I tried this and then it evolved. Like every single person talked about how it was like an evolution over time, little things they were doing. And I don't think anybody even said that they had made it, right? No, nobody talked about like, and now I've done this and I'm going to do this forever. I think that's the other thing that's so worth realizing is that like it was continual baby steps and they continue to make those little shifts and changes and adjustments based on the students who are in front of them, based on the school community, based on just everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's just a good reminder that no matter where you are in your career, in your school, in your whatever, there's always room for growth and change and experimenting and, you know, just really pay attention to the students in front of you and that'll kind of guide you.
Yeah. Yeah. So if people want to like hear more sound bites or like see a little bit, see more about your work, is there a way we can see it? And
yep, absolutely. So for that conference, as I said, I put together the sound clips. There's also just a website that you can go to. It's TeresaHoover.com/perspectives on empowerment. I'll put a link in the show notes. But from there you can find, I've got a couple different sound clips, and then you can also find like the really nerdy research stuff, like the theoretical framework and the references and all of that. But I find it a little bit fascinating. So somebody else out there might find it interesting too. And you can just kind of learn more about all those different things. And like I said, it's been fascinating to me. And I know we say that the podcast in some ways is a little bit selfish because Catherine and I get to talk to amazing people.
Yeah.
and maybe the research was a little selfish too, but at the same time, it's just, I think I've learned a lot about this topic and I think that it will be beneficial to others as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yay.
thanks for sharing it with us.
Of course.
And I mean, thanks for listening. Yeah. And I'm excited to see where this goes, because I feel like sometimes these things always build upon each other. So who knows where all this will go. And that's kind of exciting.
So. Absolutely. Yep. 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 Yeah. So awesome. Well, again, thanks for letting me share. And I'll have to just keep everyone updated as the research progresses. And
I think so. Because I mean,
next.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Keep us updated.
Will do. All right. Thanks. If you like today's episode, you will love the PassTheBatonBook.com website, where you can find free resources, coaching services, and how to support Pass the Baton. Speaking of support, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. Thanks again for listening.